a series of messages titled Faith and Reason. Can this come back just a little bit? Thanks, Archer. The message today is titled Science versus God. Now, over recent decades, there's become a widespread belief that science has the answers for everything. Unless science can prove it, it's not real. So within our culture, this culture that we live in, we have this thing that sort of dumped on us a little bit, that science is the be-all and the end-all. And more people who are holding this view that unless science proves that it can't be real, it puts a great pressure on us as Christians. What is science actually saying, and how does this relate to faith? There's a whole heap of people out there that sort of think, well, why bother with faith? Because science has got all the answers. And it's becoming a difficult thing for us in this age to be people of faith when supposedly science seems to be throwing at us, well, you know what, faith, silly. Okay? So that's the whole purpose of this message. And what we're doing through this series, and today in particular, we're drawing on the sciences. We're looking at science to tell us what does science say and how does that relate to faith. And maybe science has a bit to say about faith that we can hook onto, and we're not just sort of out here in limbo sitting here somewhere and all the science is saying, well, we're silly for believing in a God. That maybe science has actually got something to say that we can hold on to, and we can sort of put back on those people who are saying to us that, why would you believe in God? Science proves that there is no God. So in this series, we're going to be drawing on the sciences of astrophysics, biology, astrology, and all sorts of other ologies, and I know immediately what you people are thinking. Greg is not that smart. You are absolutely correct. I'm happy to run with that. But I did come across this series of lectures from scientists of the various fields, and these scientists have got more letters after their names than I have in my full name, and all of these scientists are Christians. So we live in a culture where science is telling us that faith in God is just silly, but here are Christian people who are highly, highly, highly qualified in their fields. And this series of lectures I found fascinating. I found it fascinating from an apologetics point of view. Apologetics is just the term that we use, meaning the arguments that we have to defend our faith. So Christian scientists are prepared to use science to help us to defend Christian faith. And that's a fascinating thing in and of itself, because science is telling us, or their culture is telling us, that belief in God is silly because science proves there is no God. Now, before we start, I want to say right up front, I won't be mentioning many Bible verses today. This is what we do. I stand here as a pastor, and we use the Bible, and we explain the Bible and that sort of stuff. That's not what we're doing today. We're looking at science. And how does that relate to our faith? Okay, so if you can forgive me for that, but I think you'll understand that as we go through. Now this morning, the basic question is, has science made belief in God unreasonable and obsolete? Has science made belief in God unreasonable and obsolete? Science itself definitely does not disprove God. You can't prove God, you can't disprove God. There's no scientific formula, well, this must be God or there can't be God because of this scientific formula. You can't prove or disprove. But there are some significant aspects of science which actually points towards the strong possibility that there is a God. And within science, in all the scientific fields, they will lead you to a point. Here's the evidence, here's the evidence, here's the evidence, and they come to a stop because they can't prove, therefore, there is a God. Can't be done. Okay, we understand that. So what we're doing this morning is getting right up to this point to where science finishes. And for us, the next logical step is, well, there must be a God. Now, today I'm going to do my best to explain that. The first thing that we need to understand In our culture, when everybody's saying, well, you know, with belief in God, well, science has proved there is no God, the first thing we need to understand is that 95% of science is completely irrelevant to Christianity, and 95% of Christianity is completely irrelevant to science. Now, if you click down, Archer, or somebody up there, just click underneath that writing, there should be some little graphics. There we go, little graphics. So 95%. One circle there is science. The other circle is Christian faith, and you can see that there's just that little tiny overlap right in the middle where science and faith actually talk to each other and there's things that they have in relation to each other. The rest of it doesn't have anything to do with each other. Now, I'm not saying that we should ignore science. I'm not trying to say that science is evil and as Christians we should be avoiding it. I'm not saying that at all. It's just that the vast majority of science cannot prove or disprove Christian belief and vice versa. They're completely separate from each other. For example, the chemical composition of water is H2O. We all learnt that in school. Everybody knows that. H2O, that's a chemical composition of water. That's how science describes it. Now, whether the chemical composition of water is H2O or H3O or H4O, that has no relevance whatsoever to the Christian faith. You with me? Irrelevant. Neither does the discovery of penicillin or the nature of igneous rock. Has nothing to do with Christian faith. It's science. They've discovered these things. They analyse these things. And there they are. And the reverse is true. Jesus' death on the cross for the forgiveness of sins is irrelevant to science. Chemistry, physics, geology and the like have nothing to say about whether all Christians should speak in tongues, how the Trinity works, or whether Christ died for the elect or for everybody. Completely irrelevant. All of those things. Are you with me? Tiny little percentage there where they overlap and science talks about faith and faith can talk about science. So the claim that science has proved there's no God is just nonsense. It's just a tiny little bit of stuff that overlaps there, and not everything is related to the scientific field of faith and all that sort of stuff. So 95% of science is irrelevant to Christian faith. 95% of Christian faith is irrelevant to science. Within that overlap, there's a significant amount of science that lends support to a belief in God. Within that little 5% overlap, there is a significant amount of science that lends support to a belief in God. And we're going to look at some of that evidence today. So the first bit of evidence is the second law of thermodynamics. Got it? You know what it is? Neither did I. And I'm going to do my best to explain it. The second law of thermodynamics says this. It'll be up on the screen. In a closed system, the amount of useful energy is constantly being used up. For example, imagine a car. The car needs petrol to run. Or these days it needs electricity or it needs diesel, so we've got a few options there. So petrol, it needs petrol to run. As the car runs, as the motor is running, it is burning petrol. And as it burns the petrol, it's creating energy to run the motor, so all the moving parts start working and the wheels start turning and you can drive down the road. And the more energy the car uses, the more petrol it uses, correct? So if you're on a long trip, you're in the car, you're driving a long way, and you look down and you say, oh, I need more petrol because it's running out. The petrol has been burnt up, creating the energy to make your car get from point A to point B. At some point, we need more petrol. Now, if the car was a closed system, because this is the important thing, this is what the second law of thermodynamics tells us. If the car was a closed system, that would mean that the petrol tank is welded shut. The doors are welded shut. The bonnet is welded shut. The boot is welded shut. There is no way of adding more petrol into the car. That's the closed system. So so eventually, this we've started the motor, we've filled the tank, we've started the motor, we've welded it all shut very carefully in case any sparks did some serious damage, but very carefully the car is a closed system. There's no way of adding petrol to the tank, so eventually the petrol will be used up and the car will stop. Correct? Some of us have found that out on the side of the road in a very dark night, and we've had to ring up mum and dad and say, oh, I ran out of petrol. Now, science says that the universe is a closed system. The universe is a closed system. It has energy. It has light energy, heat energy, and motion energy. But because it's a closed system, there is no more energy being added to it. This is what science tells us. And science says that without a shadow of a doubt, the universe is using up all its energy, and there's coming a day when the universe will use up all the energy that it has, and the universe will die. That's not good news for us. Hopefully that's billions of years away, as science tells us it probably is, but that's what they say. Now, there used to be an argument that the universe has existed forever. There used to be an argument that the universe has existed forever. It had no starting point, it's just always been there. Now, science has changed its mind about this, because as they looked at this theory and they've looked at it a bit more closely and they've done a few calculations, they've decided that that is not correct anymore. What they've decided is that if the universe existed forever, so we're talking trillions and zillions of years, if the universe existed that long, then it would have used up all the energy because there's no more energy being put into it because it's a closed system, no more energy is coming in, and the universe could not have existed forever because it would be dead already. There would be nothing. Scientists believe the universe, because the universe still has energy, it must have had a beginning. The universe must have had a beginning because we still have energy and we're all still here. This theory about the beginning of the universe is commonly known as the Big Bang. And science doesn't debate anymore whether the universe had a beginning. That's a given across the scientific world. The universe had a beginning, and the common name for that is the Big Bang. The debate now is not whether the universe existed forever or whether it's, you know, when did it start. The debate is, well, where did the energy come from to create the universe? If it's always existed, then it's always been there, but science says, no, it hasn't always existed. It began at a particular point in time. There was this Big Bang, and then the universe is the result of it. This whole thing is that, well, where did the energy come from? It's a closed system. Everything's welded shut. There's no energy being poured into the universe. And the logical conclusion is that the energy must have been put into it from outside in the beginning. That's the key. It's a closed system. You can't put energy into it. Energy must have been put into it from outside in the beginning. If we go back to the example of the car, how did the petrol get put in the tank in the first place? Well, it's simple, isn't it? We put it in there. So, you know, a person came along, filled up the petrol tank, put the petrol in, welded it all shut, and away it goes. The question is, when we're thinking about faith, according to the second law of thermodynamics, and we're thinking about what science is telling us, the question is, what or who put the energy into the beginning of the universe? You see, the second law of thermodynamics takes us right up to the point where some sort of super powerful, eternal something must have put the energy in to create the Big Bang. Christians go to the next logical step. So the science stops there. And science has this own conclusion. Well, it seems that there's you know, this super powerful thing that's not limited to the universe must have put the energy in. Well, Christians, we go to the next step and say, hey, we know who the super powerful eternal thing is. And it's not a thing at all, it's a person. We call him God. It's the next logical step. Science can't prove the next logical step, but science takes us all the way up to that point, and we can step into the next step and say, hey, we've got an answer for that. All the science brings us up to a point, and it is reasonable, it is more than reasonable to be able to say, then there must be a God. As one non-Christian scientist said, it looks like the Big Bang must have had a big banger. The universe had a beginning, therefore it's a reasonable conclusion that God started it. And you can read all about that in Genesis chapters 1 through to 3. It's right there. The second piece of scientific evidence that lends support to a belief in God is the fine-tuning of the universe. Scientists have discovered that there are a number of physical factors that if they were slightly smaller or slightly larger by even a billionth of a percentage point, no life could appear anywhere in the universe. Little graphic there is a picture of an atom. And again, if you did any science in high school, you would have come across all of this. Hopefully you can see that there. But there's a little electron. These are the electrons. They zoom around here, sort of on the outside. We've got some protons and neutrons and all that stuff. The nucleus is in here, and these guys are zooming around there, and they're not bumping into each other. They're doing all the right things, which is really good news for us. Science has discovered that an electron has a negative charge. They can measure how much negative charge an electron has. They've also discovered that if the charge was a tiny bit more or a tiny bit less, there'd be no living things in the universe. A tiny bit more or a tiny bit less, there'd be no living things in the universe. They've made the same discovery for the mass of a proton, the mass. A little bit larger, a little bit smaller, and there'd be no living thing in the universe. The same with gravity, a little bit more, a little bit less, there'd be no living thing in the universe. The same with the rate at which the galaxies expand away from each other, so the universe is expanding outward. And they've discovered that the rate at which the universes expand away from each other, a little bit slower or a little bit faster, there'd be no living thing in the universe. And again, picture it like this. Pretend that this room is full of dials. So all the walls and the ceiling, if you like, it's got dials, perhaps like that, maybe with a marker that sort of points up to a particular point. Now that point there has, that dial has 100 points. What we're picturing is thousands of these knobs just covering the walls, covering the ceiling, covering the floor, and each one of these knobs has 1,000 settings. Not 100, it has 1,000 settings. Each dial, every dial in the building, one of those settings, one of those 1,000ths is coloured red. And every dial in this room is set to the red setting. We got that? Good. Let's pretend that my grandson, who likes to walk past the stove and turn the knob, let's pretend that he comes in and he sees one of these knobs and he thinks to himself, that's interesting, I might turn that. And he turns one of these knobs, one 1,000th, so one setting point. Click. He just destroyed the universe. Thousands of them, if one little thing is changed by just one little percentage point, or even a point 0.00000 of a percentage point, it destroys the universe. let's make our heads ache just a little bit more. I hope you're with me. Let's assume that the Big Bang happened, the universe is created. What are the odds that everything is going to fall perfectly into place? What are the odds that all of these things, we've talked about a dial and a thousand, you know, all of these settings and the universe, bang, and everything falls into place and we've got all of these dials in our mind, they're all set on red. What are the odds that that can happen? Bang! All the electrons are negatively charged to perfection. The mass of the protons are exactly the right size. The gravity is exactly the right number in newtons. The galaxies all separate in perfect separation pace. And I'm not just talking about four things that have to line up to do that. I'm talking about millions of things that have to line up. Bang, millions of things all explode into this perfection that we call the universe. If I've got a bucket, garden bucket, or for us, camping bucket, and I've loaded that bucket up full of dice, the dice are this big, okay? Normal dice that we play dice games with. If I've got a bucket full of these dice, how many dice do you think are in the bucket? Let's what number? Any number? Good enough for me. 3,400 dice in the bucket. Here's the thing. The Big Bang says that if I take this bucket, this is the creation of the universe, and I just throw all the dice out, just throw them out on the floor, they all have to land on 6 for the universe to be perfectly formed. Giant Yahtzee, thank you very much. It's hard enough to get 5 dice to land on 6 at the same time. Anybody played Yahtzee? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, okay, I thought I was the only one, me and Jennifer. We know that. How hard is it to get a Yahtzee? That's why it's worth more points. How many did we get? 2,600 dice all have to land on 6 for the universe to all of a sudden be formed in perfection. One non-Christian scientist, he said if you use the illustration of the dice, the only way that could happen is if the dice were rigged. And the only way is that if the dice were rigged, someone must have rigged them. Science takes us right up to the point where we come to a point and says, look at the universe. Everything is perfect. One little thing out of place and the universe doesn't exist anymore. And they take us to this point and say, isn't that amazing? Christians say, well, we know who rigged the dice. We know who put the energy into the universe at the beginning. We know who rigged the dice and set it all up so that all the scientific information, all the scientific stuff is exactly perfect. And we call that dice rigger God. You see, it's a reasonable scientific conclusion that the universe is as it is because something or someone outside the universe fine-tuned it to perfection. God, the idea of God, the thought that maybe there is a God, is a reasonable, logical conclusion to those two bits of science that we've thought about this morning. You still with me? Two people have nodded their head. That is sensational. That's fantastic. Everybody else is asleep, but that's okay. I understand that. We're going to take a break. Okay, I said there's two parts because I've got another couple of points to think about a little. We've done two bits of scientific evidence that points to God. So the third bit of evidence that points to God is the discovery of biological information. Did anybody see the film Contact with Jodie Foster? We've all watched. A lot of people watch that. Yeah, okay. The Jodie Foster character worked for a group called SETI, S-E-T-I. SETI stands for Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and it's a real organisation. The movie was based on a real organisation. The outcome of that organisation was a bit, that was the interesting part, but it wasn't true. But it's the SETI, they have listening equipment pointed into outer space and they're listening for any signal of intelligent life. It's a real organisation. They've got this high-powered listening equipment that just pointed out in the outer space there somewhere. They're listening for intelligent life. As they listen, they hear all sorts of things. They hear squeals, they hear knocking noises, they hear pops, they hear bangs. And apparently the universe simply makes these noises. That's the sort of noises that the universe makes going about its business of being the universe. Just makes those noises. But SETI, this scientific group, they're not listening for just noise. They're not just listening for any old noise. They're listening for noise that shows signs of intelligence. Now in the movie, one day Jodie Foster heard something different. Rather than normal random pops, squeals and bangs, she heard a signal that contained the first 20 prime numbers. And straight away, Jodie Foster knew that an intelligence had sent a message. Now, we're not quite sure who that intelligence is. It could be the next slide up there, Neil, or maybe not. Could have been. SETI makes this assumption. Information can only come from an intelligent mind. Information can only come from an intelligent mind. Random noise from outer space is just noise. But the first 20 prime numbers is information, and intelligence and intelligence is telling you something. Now, I'm not sure how long ago it was now. Was it 15 years or so ago or 20 years ago? Maybe not even that long ago, but the scientists were working on cracking the DNA code. Do you remember that? Big news. They're close. They've almost got the DNA code sorted. It was news everywhere. And the atheists loved this. The atheists loved it because once we crack the DNA code, we will be able to show everybody that there is no God, because the DNA will prove that there is no God. Now, scientists have discovered that the DNA in our bodies, is not a random set of cell strings or atoms. It's not random at all. What they discovered is that DNA is actually information. The proper name for DNA is a sequential molecular string of chemical information. That's what it is. Your DNA gives information to your cells that tells them to form in a particular way, to form the shape of the nose you have. That's come from your DNA, which is inbuilt into your body. Your DNA tells your cells to grow as tall as you are. Your DNA tells your cells to give you the colour of the hair that you have before you go to the hairdresser. Now, you are as you are because your DNA has told your cells to form in a particular way to make you look the way that you look. And here's the point. SETI, the scientific body, says information can only come from an intelligent mind. Because our DNA is actually information, it must have come from an intelligent mind. Intelligent design is a common conclusion from all sorts of fields of science. We thought about that in the last section. We've got all of this perfection that makes up the universe. So this intelligent design, science calls it intelligent design. There seems to be an intelligence that has put all this together. And many non-Christian scientists, again, they do all their research, they get to this point, they get to the information, they get to the end conclusion, they are happy. Lots of non-faith scientists are happy to say there is intelligent design in our universe, in everything. And the next step that we go to is that intelligent design, we know who designed it. If there is intelligent design, there must be an intelligent designer who's put this information into our DNA that tells our bodies to be as we are. And the atheists have gone silent about DNA. They don't talk about it anymore because it did the exact opposite. Instead of proving there is no God, it actually strongly suggested, hey, there's something here, there's an intelligence behind all of this. You don't hear the atheists throwing this out anymore. They were loud and they were proud coming up to cracking the code, cracking the DNA code. And Christians, we say we know who the intelligent designer is. That logical next step. We know who it is. The intelligent designer is God. So the Big Bang must have had a big banger. The fixed dice must have had a fixer. The design of our DNA must have had an intelligent designer. And if you want to Google intelligent design, just go right ahead, because you'll find science will take you up to that point. Who did the designing? Or what did the designing? Science will say, what did the designing? We say, who did the designing? And the last piece of scientific evidence that lends support to a belief in God is, where does mind or consciousness come from? We all have a mind, and I'm just glad of those little bits in between these two parts of the message sort of came in between that, because it sort of kept us conscious, it kept us awake, it kept us focusing on what we should be. But we have a mind, human beings have a mind, we have a consciousness, science likes to talk about it as consciousness. Now, consciousness is invisible, but it's real. Maybe life is a better way to put it, if you sort of want to get a handle on it. It's invisible, but it's real. You can't see, smell, touch, or hear a thought, a desire, or an emotion. You sort of see the results of those things, but all those things are invisible. But we all know that this is part of life as a human being. Now, science tells us that the universe is made up of matter. Everything around us is matter. The scientific description of matter is that matter does not contain consciousness or the potential for consciousness. This music stand is matter. It has no consciousness. It doesn't think, it doesn't have desires, it doesn't have emotions, and according to science, it will never develop those things. It doesn't have consciousness nor the potential for consciousness, because the music stand is matter. And no matter how long we wait, no matter how much we want this music stand to have consciousness, this music stand will never have consciousness. It will never have life. It will never begin to think. It will never begin to have emotions. It will never begin to have desires. If you start with matter and you rearrange it according to the laws of chemistry and physics, what do you get? You get rearranged matter. That's all you get. And it doesn't matter what you do with matter. You can't squirt, force, heat, hammer, or manipulate consciousness into it. It doesn't have consciousness, nor does it have the potential for consciousness. See, there was a big bang, science says, and matter formed into what we call the universe. The whole of the universe is matter, and the laws of physics and chemistry and all the other scientific laws, they impacted the matter, and the Big Bang squirted and forced and heated and hammered and manipulated and impacted the matter. But of course, according to science, matter cannot create consciousness because it doesn't have the potential for consciousness. Science says human beings are matter. Everything in the universe is matter. Yet here we are, conscious beings. We are thinking, emotional, passionate beings. So where did our ability to think, feel emotions, and desire come from? Everything is matter. Matter does not have consciousness, and matter will never have consciousness. Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. It says, so God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. And I think that being made in the image of God includes intelligence, emotions, and desire, amongst other things. Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, it says, the Lord God formed the man from the dust of the ground, and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being. And at the risk of being thrown out as a heretic, let me just reword this verse using the scientific language that we've been using this morning. The Lord God formed the man from matter he had already created. He breathed consciousness into the man's nostrils, and the man became a living, conscious, intelligent, emotional, passionate being. That works for me. According to what science tells us and according to what God has shown us, and the Bible's never intended to be a science manual. It just gives us a very brief glimpse of what God did to create the universe, to create mankind, to create humankind. And just simply using the language of science, it just slips in so easily, doesn't it? So we understand that matter can't have consciousness, it can't have life, yet here we are. How do we get here? How do we be who we are? There is only one reason. And God has let us know that. Our consciousness must have come from a conscious being. So let's just summarise all of this as we finish. The Big Bang must have had a big banger. Somebody must have caused it. Something must have caused it. And we as Christians say we know who that is. The fixed dice must have had a fixer. We know who that is. The design of our DNA must have had an intelligent designer. And we as Christians say, well, we know who that intelligent designer is. Our consciousness must have come from a conscious being. And we as Christians say, well, we know who that conscious being is that put consciousness into human beings. And we have a really brief description of that right at the beginning of our Bibles. We also believe as Christians that the Big Banger, the dice fixer, the intelligent designer and the conscious being revealed himself, and he continues to reveal himself in the pages of the Bible. So just as we finish today, I'm sure our head is spinning. I'm sure that as we go away, we're not going to remember all of those things. But I just want to encourage you. We do live in a world that is quick to deny faith of any sort. We live in a world where people are quick to ridicule you if you have faith. We live in a world that says, because most people are ignorant of what they're saying, that science disproves God. People who say that have never actually done their research. So I just want to encourage you that as you leave here after the AGM, as you go into the week that God has got in front of you, you have a voice. You might not remember everything that's been said. And by the time I leave here today, I'll probably forget all those things myself. I understand that. It's not the fields that we move in and think in, and it's not what we study all the time. But we can hold our heads up high and say, hang on a minute. You take us to this, science takes us to this point, and acknowledging that there is something else that can't be proven, but it's there. We know who it is. Be brave. Speak up. Don't bite your tongue. Don't feel embarrassed. Well, I don't have all the scientific answers. Be proud of our faith. Be proud to say to the people that we mix with, hang on a minute, and start a discussion. Let me pray. Heavenly Father, as we wade through this, and it's pretty heavy going, Lord, I pray that our faith would become a lot more than just what we do because we believe it. That our faith would be based on tangible things. We don't have to just have blind faith. Lord, you've created in this universe things that people we call scientists look at and examine and ponder and don't have an ultimate answer for a lot of it. And Lord, I pray that we as your children, that we as people who believe in you, people who understand that you have revealed yourself to us, Lord, help us to be people who are prepared to talk about that. People who don't shy away from the self-proclaimed experts that surround us. People who use all sorts of excuses so they don't have to think about you. So it'll help us to be people that point other people in your direction so that they can come to the same conclusions that we have. And Lord, I thank you for these magnificent scientists who know and love you just as much as we do, who have letters after their name of just with all their qualifications, and they've immersed themselves in the sciences, and they will speak up for you. Lord, I thank you for those people, that ordinary us have people who can back us up. So Lord, I pray that just as we leave, as we go our separate ways, as we go to work, as we go to the clubs and go to the places that we belong to, Lord, I pray that you would embolden us, that you would strengthen us, that your word would continue to go forward from this church. And it's only going to happen if we take it out. And we pray that in Jesus' name. Amen.